The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as
Cam Newton,
fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
That's right. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. That's right. Apparently, the Redskins got taught a lesson by Superman.
Yeah, never ever go to Carolina without some kryptonite.
Exactly. Cam Newton putting on a show. And essentially, what is going to be for this week, our second beatdown show in a row.
Yeah, right.
But last week, it was the Redskins doing the beatdown. This week, give us the get beat down show. So the Redskins lose to Carolina 44-16. And yeah, man, look, here's the thing. A little bit later on in the show, Kevin's going to talk about that new movie Creed because he saw it. I'm very interested in that simply because it's just not enough to talk about when it comes to this game. Look, we're going to go up and down like we always do, up and down the numbers, up and down each offense, defense, special teams. We'll go up and down the way we normally do. But man, look, this is a unique situation because when you look on the schedule, especially the way the season was going in the first couple of weeks, you look at this game and you figure, okay, this is going to be a tough one. This will likely be an L. If you're marking W's and L's, you put an L beside this one, right, Kevin? For the most part.
A big L. But, capital L.
you don't even take much time to think about it.
Capital L. Yeah, right.
But this to lose this badly, and I know what's going to happen, and we'll probably get to this a little later on in the show. Folks are going to want to talk about some poor officiating. Folks are going to talk about some questionable calls. Look, that had nothing to do with this beatdown. They were going to lose by close to 30 points, no matter which way you splice those calls one way or the other. So yeah, the Redskins drop to 4-6. Ironically, just one game out of first place or a tie for first place in the NFC East,
which tells you the sad state of the NFC East right about now. But yeah,
and the Panthers make their way to 10-0. Here's something also, Kevin. We'll get to this. The Redskins 0-5 on the road this year, and only have won two road games since 2006. Team. Not a good team on the road.
I blame RG3, man. I think that the team is too distracted. And
by having him on the side.
Not only is he deactive, they ought to deport him. So that's what they're saying. But what can you attribute that to? I mean, it's like you got to play on the road. You can't be a winning team without winning on the road, right? You know,
so at least eight of your games are going to be on the road
every year. So you can't blame the road. At some point, you have to look internally and say, maybe it's just preparation. Maybe it's the other things we don't see behind the scenes, like getting into your hotel room all right, you know, making sure your flight's okay and make sure you get some luggage and go to bed and all that.
Outside of that 2012 season, you look at how many wins the team had, period, in 2013, 14, 15. In those last two seasons, they haven't had that many wins anyway. And so when you count up, four wins, okay, and only four were at home, that's only half of your home games anyway. So some of it just counts, I think, to just not having a good team on the field during that period anyway. And then it's tougher, you know, on the road when you've got to go and you've got the home field advantage for the other team. And so, let's start with the offense. Couldn't run the ball. You know, could run. Now, here's the thing. while that is a little, deceptive in the fact that you're saying, okay, they couldn't run the ball. What, the Chris Thompson was the leading rusher with just 10 yards on four carries. Morris didn't accumulate any yards. I mean, yeah.
Well, they claimed, this is what I heard in the post game. I didn't hear this anytime during the broadcast, that Alfred Morris had an early rib injury, right?
Right.
And I didn't understand that. I didn't see when it happened.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I just, one time he was in the game, but they were throwing the ball quite a bit, you know? So, the stats are a little misleading. And it got to a point where they just couldn't. They just didn't have the need to run it. Running was just like a moot point, right? You know? But that came up. They were successful early because of the big plays, right?
Right.
But the running game, I'm kind of concerned. I'm very concerned the way they treated Matt Jones after the fumble. Mm-hmm. I mean, true, this is the fourth time he put the ball on the ground.
Right.
But it was almost like they said, you go stand in the corner, right?
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, again, this almost gets back to the same stuff when it comes to whether you're going to go with RG3 or Kirk Cousins. No matter who you go with, the guy can't look over his shoulder and can't feel as if, okay, if I make one mistake or make another mistake or as I'm growing, then I'm going to be disciplined to the bench and not able to get back into the game. I mean, if he fumbles once, okay, he's still your guy. You got to still go with him, right?
Right.
So when we look at that with the offense, so the running game is bad, but the Carolina Panthers defense, they've got one of the best defenses in the league. And
absolutely.
So okay, you knew it was going to be tough sledding there. Here's one stat that kind of stood out to me. The Redskins gave up 5 sacks against the Panthers. That's an awful lot of sacks. It's going to be hard to win when you're giving up 5 sacks.
One thing I saw that the Panthers defense was doing, and I think we mentioned this early in the season, the way to take away the short underneath passing game where you have like a Jameson Crowder or a Jordan Reed coming underneath, they would bring the linebackers up to the line of scrimmage. They would have 8 in the box, but they weren't rushing but 3 or 4. And those other guys played like a short intermediate zone, which was like right in the way of these crossing routes. So it was a brilliant strategy. It seemed like there wasn't enough going on with the Burgundy and Gold offensive brain trust to counter that. I don't know what, for the life of me, why not? I mean, we're talking about the running game, but still, why not send DeSean Jackson deeper, like once every 3 plays?
Yeah,
just send him deep.
Keep him honest. Just to let him know he's there and he's
right,
fast.
Right.
Because
he's going to take it after, you know, he burned one guy one time.
Right.
After he burns that guy, he's going to automatically take 2.
And even if, you know, sometimes you get an incompletion, but you can get a pass interference call. You know, you loosen the defense up a little bit. Who's to say he won't get the ball? You know, and so, no, you're absolutely right there. And what's interesting, too, when you're talking about stats, I mean, when you look at Kirk Cousins, 22 for 30, 207 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Those stat lines are deceivingly kind of good or normal. You know what I mean? But he didn't have a good game at all.
Not at all. You got to credit the Panthers, but I think that there were some things that Kirk was looking for that just wasn't there, and that was one of the reasons they had to give up the 5 sacks. It takes time for those guys to get from the defensive line to Kirk.
Right.
And what was happening early, you had to get rid of the ball quick. And remember, there was another quarterback on this team last year. They accused of holding on to the ball too long.
A little bit too long,
yeah.
Right.
But you know what? Kirk, if he didn't get rid of it immediately, the Panthers prevented him from holding on to it too long because they took it away from him. You're holding the ball too long, Kirk. Let us hold it for a while, right?
Correct. And those are some of the plays I think that really kind of, you know, once things kind of got out of control, because at one point in the first half it was 14-14, and then things just, and, well, they gave it a touchdown, and then you get the kickoff return, and they were 14-14. I mean, when things started to snowball, they kind of went downhill really, really fast. It doesn't help when you're turning the ball over and the Panthers are making you pay for every single turnover that you get.
Yeah, you know, for a while this season, we thought we had the new and improved Kirk Cousins, but, you know, in reality.
You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run amok. This is what he does.
Now, are you more surprised with the 4 touchdowns that Kirk threw last week or this performance today, right? I'm beginning to think that today's Kirk is Kirk.
Right. And you had hit the nail on the head, I think, early last week when we opened the show, and you were like, I don't know if everyone should be so excited about this beatdown against the Saints, the Saints like this at home. And I think it was several times on the show you said, let's just be cautious here. Let's not get too excited about this. You know, there are doses of reality possible in the future, and it came 1 week later. Again, a 44-16 loss at the Carolina Panthers. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500. 900 AM at federalnewsradio.com. He's Kevin Stanfield. I'm Claude Jennings. And here's the thing. If there was a bright spot, at least there was a touchdown in the kicking game. looking for the specialty, and there they are.
That's interesting because I was just speaking to someone before the game about Andre Roberts and his lack of production. I was thinking that maybe we even should have kept a Leonard Hankerson or something because Roberts just wasn't producing. And I don't know why Jamison Crowder wasn't returning kicks, right. But they had Roberts there. He made a couple of great moves, followed his blocking, good blocking, no pushes in the back, no holding anything. Folled the seam across the field, 99-yard kickoff return. And you had to be happy because two big plays had them in a game where Carolina was just dominating in time of possession. But two big plays had the game tied.
Right.
Did you see the stat? And I was amazed by this. The 14-14 score at the end of the first half was the most scored in a first period.
Oh, in that first quarter. Yeah. 28 points. Yeah. That's actually pretty shocking to me, to be honest.
Really. In this like throw 'em up league, right? Lack of running game, high powered offense league, the 28 points. You know what? I'm going to question that. I'm going to have to
do some research.
Right? Just because it's on the NFL broadcast doesn't mean it's true.
Right. We don't believe everything that we hear.
That's right. We don't. Yeah, you all should believe it, though. If it comes from us, you should believe it.
Just go ahead and believe it. So, in his second game back, DeSean Jackson, 5 receptions, 87 yards, 1 touchdown. And look, he had a pretty good game. Jordan Reed had a pretty good game as well. But there were several plays, man, where the guys just seemed like they weren't connected. And it may be because they were down by so much so early in the third quarter. I remember looking at the score, and, man, it might have been maybe 28, maybe 31, probably. I think it was 31-14. And I'm looking at the score, and my wife's like, it's just the third quarter. There's 10 minutes left in this thing. And she's like, this can get ugly pretty bad.
It could get
ugly. They were down by so much. I think that the body language, the attitude had just changed. I mean, there was one play where, Trent just lets the defensive end just run right past him and get the curtain. He's just standing there looking at him. Like, they were just so out of it so early emotionally.
Well, the big play, the play where the hit on Greg Olsen. Mm-hmm. And Culver like hit him, and then the ball popped up, and Culver went and ran for a touchdown.
Right.
And the ref called a personal foul. And if you look at the rules of the game, it was a completely legitimate call.
Right.
He left his feet. He hit the guy from the neck and above.
Right.
You know.
And here's the thing that's so weird about that call is that the all of the responsibility is on the defender not to hit what is called a defenseless receiver.
Right.
But the receiver doesn't even have to be on a direct path a certain way. Like, he can adjust his body angle at any point in time. And if the defender is coming at him from one angle, but then the receiver changes course a little bit, and then he becomes, like, in the path of the defender, it's still the defender's responsibility, even if he's already left his feet and has already basically engaged the receiver. And that's so hard to do as a defender, to kind of gauge, okay, when do I hit, when do I hit, when do I hit, when do I engage? You know, the game is so fast that you don't have the time to just sit there and wait till he figures out which angle he's going to try to catch this ball on and then make the hit. I mean, you're trying to collide and get this collision going.
Any other time I might agree with you, but Greg Olsen's a pretty big boy, and Culver had to launch himself upward to hit Olsen in the neck, right? You know, if he had hit him in the numbers, if he had launched himself and hit him in the numbers, and then it came with the forearm too,
that's
right?
That's what I think.
The forearm, because you know, put it this way, there's no numbers on the guy's head. There's no numbers on his neck. So he wasn't aiming for the numbers. He was 3-2-1 blast off and shot himself up. Right. So that was a completely legitimate call, right? It was very weird to see him hit the guy, then catch the ball out of the air and take off. Yeah, that took a lot of skill to be able to do that, right? To hit a guy illegally. Catch the ball and score a touchdown.
The ball pops up. Someone else who's kind of standing around him that way. The ball pops up and then him catching himself. You're right. That's a unique skill.
That sort of took, this team showed right now that they have a problem dealing with adversity, right? You're not going to get those calls. The ball's not going to bounce your way every time, but it's a measure of a good team and how you deal with that adversity, right? And they just had a problem dealing with it today. It's
no,
like,
you're absolutely right.
And what's especially troubling about that is it came after a blowout victory.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if they believe in themselves enough, they say, you know, they'll say, okay, well, we'll get it back.
Right.
You know, but they're not. But the way they treated Matt Jones mm-hmm. after the fumble, right? You know, go stand in the corner. The way, like, yeah. all of a sudden it's up against us against the refs. And you notice that after that, they start getting a little chippy, trying mm-hmm. to do a little extracurricular pushing and stuff after yeah. the play. All that's uncalled for, right? You gotta handle adversity. You got to say, okay, we're going to beat the 11 guys on the field and adversity, too, right?
Right.
And I haven't
right.
seen that from this team.
And that's what it felt like Carolina was doing, just straight up beating the man in front of you.
Beating
kind
them.
Of overpowering the guy.
Beating them.
You know, just being just a, you know, a better team. And, you know, the Panthers are a better team, but you would have expected maybe a little more fight. And I think just being down so early, so fast, just took the wind out of the Skins. Again, so the Carolina Panthers 44-16. The Skins dropped to 4-6, 0-5 on the road this year with the date against the Giants coming up. Oddly enough, they win that, they'll be tied for first place in the NFC East. And so it's the second week in a row that we get to have a beat down,
and
sir.
Weird. And weird. Out of first place after all this.
After,
what do you think the Giants
are thinking?
Funny.
But what's so funny is you even look down in Dallas, you lose 7 straight and you're just 1 back from second place. Like, that's ridiculous at that
point. I hate to even think about that. But yeah, this team, you know, man, it'd be like, oh, I would love to be in first place, but you know it's like fool's gold, man. This is not a first place team. It's not. You know, let me ask you something though, man.
Sure.
What? I heard the announcer say this. Now, you know, there's a little controversy going on because some people don't like the way Cam celebrates the little dance in the end zone.
Goodness.
Some lady wrote him a letter talking about, my son watches you and you shouldn't be
ridiculous.
Doing that. You know? This guy is having the time of his life, man. I said, is that him smiling or does his mouthpiece look like that, right? He smiled from beginning to end.
Damn.
And as we said last week, man, the way Cam came into the league and, you know, he had the press conference talking about the suggestion box about mm-hmm. how to make things better. And they just stuck with him. And we've seen this guy grow up before your eyes, right? And
now he definitely was immature when he first came into
right.
the league. And now, yeah, he's definitely having a great time and he's a great player and playing at a high level right now. And what's so funny is when they lost their main receiver before the season started, like, oh goodness, who's going to pass the ball to? He's put that offense and the team really on his back, man. And what's so interesting, let me say this about this whole celebration thing, and I'm not trying to imply anything, but for, what was it, the last 2 years, every time Aaron Rodgers throw a touchdown or runs for a touchdown, he does the little
discount double check.
Yeah. And he gets the All-State commercial, and he gets the discount double check thing.
Right, right.
Cam scores, and he does his dance thing, and all of a sudden there's an issue with that.
Oh, he gets a yogurt
get
commercial,
out of
man.
Here.
Yeah,
get
yeah,
out of here with
on,
that.
Man.
So there's nothing, whoever that lady was who wrote it, find something better to do
yeah.
with your time. Because you know what else he does every time he scores? He gets the ball to some little kid, and a lot of them are sick or whatever,
yeah,
you know,
right.
suffering with cancer or whatever, and he gives them a game ball. And so get out of here with that whole Cam needs to stop dancing stuff. Cam should go to her house, knock on the door, and as soon as she opens it, just do the dance right in her face.
Just dance
just
right
dance
there.
Just right, dance right in her face.
And, you know, the teammates are starting to give the ball away, too.
Yes.
The announcer said, man, they're going to run out of footballs.
Right. You know, like, honestly, people, come on.
Yeah, come
like,
on. It's a game.
What is he writing?
It's a game.
And he's having fun. He's not doing anything bad on the family. He's just celebrating. Ah, whatever.
Yeah, they'd rather see the golden boy up in New England than like cursing everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, when Tom Brady gets animated, when he runs a ball in,
yeah.
Except Aaron Rodgers does the discount double check now, something because Cam Newton's doing something, there's a problem with
yeah,
it. That's
right.
crazy.
At least he did it with properly inflated balls.
Right,
right.
Yeah, exactly. At least he was dancing on rhythm.
Yeah,
give the brother
really,
credit.
Come on. Yeah, really.
Give the brother
really,
credit
come on, come on.
For that.
Credit where credit's due.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
right.
the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, our second beatdown show in a row. Last week's was a little different because the Redskins were the beaters. Now they're the BTs. 44-16 loss to the Carolina Panthers. You know, what was interesting, too, because we talked about this last week of how, you know, when you get going and you get the blowout win and you know, the season seems to be going pretty decently according to expectations. Well, I guess when you compare it to what you were expecting, a lot of the drama kind of goes away and no one had mentioned RG3. They started showing him on the camera again. And did you watch that, the television coverage? And all of a sudden, because of the struggles against the Panthers now, they were talking about RG3.
And they're talking about him, positively and saying mm-hmm. things like, I remember at one point they're saying, and you know, America loves a comeback story. So, you know what? He's going to get his chance to come back.
Right.
It might not be here, but he's going to get an opportunity, right? And, you know, the whole situation is just puzzling to me. If they want, we're talking about how Cam was allowed to mature before our eyes and the difference he makes. He carries the team now. And RG3, I challenge anybody listening to the show, go to YouTube and just look at RG3's 2012 highlights. Mm-hmm. Look at the highlight package and tell me, how does a guy forget to play football like that? How does he forget? Now, granted, he's been hurt. Okay, how do you forget? How do you know how to read defenses that year, but all of a sudden you can't read them this year, right? Maybe Kirk Cousins is the better quarterback this year. I don't see practice. I didn't see training camp and all that. But I just want to ask the question, how do you forget to play? How do you lose that talent, right?
Right,
you
know, right.
How does that happen?
More stylistic than anything else. They don't want him to play like that anymore.
Stylistic could play better than
Kirk. Speaking of the stylistics, yeah, exactly.
They could play better than Kirk played today.
That's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and the website is federalnewsradio.com. We'll come back. We'll talk some more about this beatdown at the hands of the Carolina Panthers. Also, we've got Kevin who's going to review the movie Creed for us, so stay close.
Now, back to the Federal Football Report with Claude and Kevin. You know, they asked me to read this, but did they invite me to be on their dopey show? Of course not. The nerve of some people. Come on, guys. I like football, too.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. We're talking about the Redskins' loss to the Carolina Panthers, 44-16, to fall to 4-6. 0-5 on the road. Carolina improved to 10-0, still unbeaten, 6-0 at home. And so we've got some post-game audio, right, Kevin? From I guess we'll start with Kirk Cousins. We spent a lot of time talking about the quarterback, and so we'll listen to what he had to say after the game.
Yeah, this is Kirk with our good friend Larry Michael after the game in the locker room, outside the locker room, on the plane, somewhere trying to get away from it. Here's Kirk.
We just gave our defense a short field and put them in a tough spot. So, it wasn't good enough today. And credit the Panthers. I mean, they're undefeated for a reason. Have a really good football team.
It was not fault.
I think we saw what we want to get to in terms of what they were able to do today.
Five sacks, too.
Yeah, took five sacks. You know, they had a good pass rush. They were getting after us. And when you have to drop back and pass as many times as we did in the second half, and they know that because of the deficit, it makes it easier and plays into their hands in order to get sacks. So that's a part of the situation in the game. But
wait a minute, hold. The score wasn't that big every time they sack you, Kirk. It wasn't like you were down by 30 and they knew you were going to pass every single time. No, matter of fact, they didn't get any sacks then because they were rushing but three. But you might want to mention that how they played a variety of defenses and they confused you a little bit and they threw some stuff at you that you just weren't prepared.
Correct.
It was like something new, something that you had not seen. Apparently, the Saints didn't do that, and these guys, all of a sudden, they changed. So how about that defense of changing things? They were coming after Kirk.
And the offensive line seemed a bit overwhelmed by what they were. What it actually looked like to me as I was watching it, and I kind of just said it to myself, it just looks like they're just getting out-physicaled out there. Like, yeah. I mean, these guys are just getting pushed around and bullied around and pushed. I mean, just out-physicaled and even the emotional. And these guys just looked like they felt beat. And if they were like just hopeless against this defensive line.
Man, it looks like they were in the Lord of the Ring movies and the Panthers were those big ugly things running out there. All right, get some more on Kirk, right?
More than we've given up this year, and credit again the Panthers for having a good
game. Yeah, credit the Panthers.
You guys wanted to get them on the road, but the reality is you're heading back home with a very, very big game coming up, unbelievably, and you could be in first place a week from tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this is the NFL. Each game is one game.
We'd like to thank Kirk for telling us that this was the NFL and not some game we're playing in our speed.
And thank you for telling us that one game is one game. This math class is brought to you by Sesame Street. Thank you, Kirk, for helping us count that one game
Continue.
Is one game.
Yeah.
You know, it's no more, no less. As much as it was tough to lose by this margin or as exciting as it was last week to win by a big margin, they all count one. And we'll try to go 1-0 each week from here on out. But, we just need to have an edge to us this week with the way we play today, learn from it, and put a much better product on the field next Sunday.
That steady Kirk Cousins demeanor coming in handy tonight. Thank you, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The steady Kirk Cousins demeanor, which causes a problem because they didn't need a steady Kirk Cousins demeanor. They needed this is what they needed. They needed a Clint Eastwood.
When things look bad, it looks like you're not going to make it, and you got to get mean. I mean, plum mad dog mean.
That's what they need, man. They don't have mad dog mean. They have, oh, well.
Hey, you know, Carolina's a good team. You know what I mean? You got to applaud their effort and blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, well, we know that. But,
you know, we know
they're good. They're 9-0, 10-0 now. Well, yeah, come out there with some fight. Somebody get mad. And this is one thing, you know, that's very interesting, too. And not that you just want people all emotional and all that kind of stuff, but where's the fire on the sidelines? You know what I mean? Like, people laugh a lot about players, whether it's Phillip Rivers or Dez Bryant, who they don't like to lose. And if they're losing big time, they're yelling. They're mad. They're trying to get people to get out there and give their best. Nobody does that on this team. They just kind of sit around like, we're losing. Carolina's good. We got to give them credit because they're just playing a heck of a game.
Yeah, you don't have any of that, man. And that comes. I don't know if you can teach that. I think you got to have that fire. You got to have a quarterback who says, you know, when times are tough, don't worry, fellas, I got you because I'm the best quarterback in the league and we're going to win this. Mm-hmm. But no, man, it'd be too far-fetched. Nobody can think like that. You know?
Right. Well, so we've got more post-game audio, correct, Kevin, from Coach Gruden.
Yeah. let me stop because I'm supposed to be a professional journalist here. You know what? No, I'm not. I'm a fan first, you know, and it hurts me because I think this team can do better. I think that there's some talented individuals on this team. I think that we had Scott McLuhan come in and added some stuff. I'd like to see a little bit of a fire, but let's see how Coach Gruden handled the post-game press conference.
You know, we've had a tendency here to, you know, when we have a couple bad things happen, they get magnified and some more things happen, unfortunately. But guys trying to make plays, yards after contact, Matt Jones trying to hurdle a pile and make a big play and lost the ball, and Jordan Reed trying to break tackles, lost the ball. We lost the ball twice in the pocket.
Notice he didn't mention who lost it in the pocket.
Hats off to them.
He mentioned Matt Jones.
Yeah, and Jordan Reed.
We have to do a better job protecting the ball.
Hey, another road game, and you guys just don't look.
I need to bring your attention to something. Uh-huh. You know, last week when we listened to the press conference, they had an issue. You couldn't hear the questions. We had to repeat what the questions were. Uh-huh. And but now they've addressed it. They've addressed it so much that the guys asking the question are more have more volume than the coach does. So thank you out there at Burgundy and Gold Park.
Competitive, is that a lack of maturity on these guys' part, a lack of pieces, or what do you attribute the just constant up and down?
Yeah, you know, if I knew that, I'd fix it. You know, I got to do a better
hold
job.
Hold it. That's your job to fix it.
Yeah, you're the coach.
Who's gonna fix it? Me and Clark.
Oh, who's boy, gonna fix this it? Is one of the funniest segments ever.
Let's go.
Frankly, you know, this is on me. You know, we had too many penalties.
Okay.
Turnovers.
We can start there.
Yes.
These are things that we have to get fixed. We are, you know, last week we were feeling pretty good, you know, you know, this game's a humbling game. You know, you feel like you can't do anything right.
He clearly wasn't listening to the show.
Don't
feel good after this win.
We have to try to do the best we can to stay level. And we're not doing that right now. We're either really good or really poor.
Wait a minute, where is this?
Tell me what you saw in that and how it impacted.
You're talking about the penalty here, the one that got called back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it has an impact. You know, it's a 14-point swing right there. But, you know, the referee made a decision, made a call. It's unchallengeable, so there's no use of me even talking about it. But it's unfortunate, man. It's a huge play in the game.
Hold it, sir.
Oh, you didn't like that answer?
Did the guy hit him in the neck or not? You saw it. They got a big TV screen down in Carolina. You saw it just like we did. The guy launched himself and hit the receiver above the shoulder pass. Mm-hmm. That was the penalty.
And it's okay to say, you know what, it was a legit call.
Right. That's fine. That's fine. You're not, you know, but if you want to blame the refs and all that, okay, go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, you know, we couldn't get the running game going. You know, it was a tough day. They did a nice job. You know, and Alfred got hurt early, and then we fumbled, and we just couldn't get any of our offense really going today.
Lost in all this, and we didn't even mention that in the first segment, the Jonathan Stewart ran for over 100 yards, too.
Jonathan Stewart, 21 carries, 102 yards. Cam Newton had 16 yards. Ted Ginn Jr., 12 yards. And Fozzie Whitaker, I have no clue who that is, six yards. But yeah,
you're absolutely right.
Right, yeah, exactly. Isn't he an actor? That's Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, okay, right.
21 carries for Jonathan Stewart, 102 yards.
That's bad when you forget that, right? You know, I guess we're so stunned about Superman and the 5 touchdown passes. All right, coach continues.
So hats off to their defense. They played very good on defense.
Yes,
Jay, if the struggles on the road feel like they come from a preparation standpoint or getting the guys ready, and they did come out well. It's the plays after that where it fell off. But is it that much of a difference between that preparedness at home and on the road? And after a game like this, you know, do you feel like the outcome would be any different no matter where it's played?
Well, I think it's football, man, whether you play at your backyard or play in a street. You know, it's a
difference.
Football.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're a professional in the league.
It's our job as coaches, X's and O's wise, and get them mentally and physically ready to go. And it's their job as players to make sure they get themselves ready to go and prepared and then make the plays. We just, unfortunately, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things today. You know, defensively, we failed to stop them. You know, failed to give any reason we couldn't.
Notice that, did you, coach? When did you figure that out? About the 35th point?
You know, we just got to move on from this as fast as we can. Learn from it again. Yeah. I say it every week on the road after the loss.
Get this one.
It's the fact.
You know, this one from the history
right
book.
And the facts of the matter
anymore.
We have
New York
guys coming to our place next week, and that's what we have to focus on. And
get
just continue to coach the young players, continue to coach the veteran players, and continue to try to get our team better and ready for next week.
Kirk had done a really good job of avoiding sacks for the most part this season. I think five today, three today. Last week. Do you see any common theme going on with the O-line right now?
No, there's a couple of them. I think we snapped it a little early, I think.
What?
Morgan didn't get out of stance. One of them, Morgan,
you
know, had a really tough down. He had to look inside of the blitz and then popped out late.
Well,
he had a good time to count up. You know, when you're playing on the road, that's the most difficult thing.
He held the ball too long?
They didn't hear that one. You get down as a pass rush with the crowd noise, the silent counts, and all that stuff. We didn't handle that part of the game very well. And their secondary did an excellent job also of making Kirk get off his primary and then come to the second or third guy, and by that time there was pressure.
Talk about the caliber of play, but in terms of how your team reacted to that, that seemed like a turning point in the game. Do you think there was an attitude adjustment for the negative by your team after seeing such a big play get called back?
Yeah, I mean, it had an impact, you know, but we still could have done enough after that play, whatever happened, to recover from that. Unfortunately, they went down and scored, and then we came back, and I think we had a turnover right away, and they went down and scored again. And then we had another turnover, and they got the field goal.
Yeah, they haven't quite a bit. They turned it over.
A huge
we turned
deal
it over, they
us.
Scored.
We talk about it all the time, the peaks and valleys in pro football and in the game, in the course of a game, and how you react. And we didn't react very well. We didn't handle it very well as a staff, and we didn't handle it very well as a team. And that's something that we have to do.
Now, I want to skip ahead a little bit because I was privy to this post-game interview, and he didn't give us a lot of information, right? I think he was a little shell-shocked, too. But I want to skip to the very end because someone was asking him about the officiating, I believe. But let's see what we got.
That was perhaps throwing the guys off.
Yeah, he's got a great hard count. He does. That's no excuse.
You can't
jump off sides. You know, you got to watch the ball. And we did a poor job of that. But hats off to him getting the line. And you got that deep voice, has a good hard count. But, you know, we
got
to watch the ball.
Barry White's
inexcusable for a defensive line. We're better than that. Holding ball on Paul Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, he got his hands outside a little bit, let go. You know, a lot of people let that call go, but they called it, you know. having that many penalties and turnovers on the road, you give yourself – very little chance.
Yeah, so right.
What do you think of Kirk's performance overall?
Well, I think when you're evaluating anybody on this football team, it's hard to give anybody a positive grade, any coach, obviously. We none of us, you know, in this locker room that we can say, he played great. You know, it's not the case. We win as a team, everybody plays great. We lose as a team, everybody plays poorly and coaches poorly. So we're all going to take this one on the chin. We got socked in the eye pretty good, but we'll bounce back.
You know, this is what's very interesting, and I'm just now seeing this, and maybe, I mean, I'm probably slow to the game. I mean, I think you've mentioned this a lot, Kevin, is that anytime there's criticism to go around, when it comes to Kirk, like, he doesn't even mention Kirk by name. He kind of is passive about it. Like, well, we all need to such as us, blah, blah, blah. Remember this whole thing about the wind being a factor for Kirk a couple weeks back. But he has no problem singling out other guys. Like Morgan Moses, he singled out about a couple of times where, you know, he said he was late off the ball.
Right, right.
He didn't have a problem singling out Matt Jones. He also didn't have a problem singling out Jordan Reed. But then when the guy just asked him specifically about Kirk, he says, evaluate any guy, you know, you got to take in consideration, like, yeah, well, we're not talking about any guy, we're talking about Kirk. Just tell us what you think. And he just seems to never want to do that. And that's crazy. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. That's the website. Carolina 44, the Redskins 16. We'll look at some of the other NFC East games before we move to this movie review, Kevin. But just some news. Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco tore his ACL and MCL. And so he's out for the season, man.
Yeah.
That's sad news.
Yeah,
to hear.
And the running back, and his name escapes me right now.
Forsyth, right?
Forsett, Justin Forsett.
Right.
Rhymes with Dorsett, you know, right? Yeah, he had a horrible forearm fracture, right? It was almost like he had two elbows, if you had seen it, right? And fortunately, they got to give the guys on TV credit for this. They didn't just keep replaying it over and over and over. Interestingly, because this is the 30th anniversary of the injury to Joe Theismann on the Monday Night Football, and you know how it was back in the day. And as a matter of fact, you remember the movie The Blind Side? That was the opening scene, and they just went back and forth showing it over and over and over again. Now we run into Joe Theismann from time to time, and I want to ask him, what does he feel when he sees that? Can he watch it?
Right.
I talked to John Riggins about it, and Riggins said, you know, it was like a shotgun going off right there, because he was right there, because he did that the flea flicker. And Lawrence Taylor didn't go for it and just caught him wrong. His cleat cut. It was a horrific injury. Yeah. And, you know, we all the best to Justin and to Joe Flacco. But this is a violent game. You know, it's not all about the glory and the dance and all that. This is a violent game. And you know, we got to, you know, have a healthy respect for the guys who are playing it. So,
correct. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so let's take a look at the rest of the teams in the NFC East. Tony Romo's back in Dallas. They go to Miami. They beat the Dolphins 24-14.
In a game they would have lost if he wasn't there, probably.
They win with Romo. They win 24-14 against the Dolphins. I'm sure that if Romo wasn't playing, they would have lost 10-9 with three field goals and coming up short if that was the case. So yeah, Romo's back. And they've got the Panthers coming up this Thursday for Thanksgiving, by the way. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody out there. Happy Thanksgiving, Kevin. You've got the Thanksgiving Day game, Carolina going to Dallas.
You think a couple people might watch that one?
I think you can count on some high ratings for that game.
The undefeated Panthers, the Cowboys with a chance to turn this season around.
Right, exactly. Romo back, it's like, you know, expectations, you know, because to be honest with you, from Cowboy fans and even in the locker room, I mean, they still think that the East is winnable. And it is. I mean, they're two games back from the Giants, one game out from the Eagles and Redskins, with two games against the Redskins coming up. And I think the Redskins still has to play both the Giants and the Eagles.
Yep.
And then I think the Giants and Eagles have to play each other. And so there's still some matchups going on right there in the NFC East. And so it's wide open for them.
The league did it that way. And hats off to the league. Remember, a couple of years back, they changed the scheduling so the division games were later in the season.
Yeah.
And more important, they meant a whole lot. And you know, hats off to them. It's going to be some great matchups in the next few weeks.
Yeah, so it's going to decide a lot. I mean, and with all four teams all within two games of the lead, I mean, you know, anything can happen with that going on. And then let's see, the Eagles get thumped by Tampa Bay 45-17, and the Eagles' next game is on Thanksgiving, but they got the early game against Detroit.
Man, you're talking about exciting quarterbacks, man. This kid, Jameis Winston,
he
can play football. And, you know, it was ironic. I mentioned to you, you know, that should be a happy day for me, because Jameis Winston was my fantasy quarterback through four touchdown passes today.
Well, then that's good, right?
Unfortunately, the guy I was up against had Cam Newton.
Who threw five?
Yeah, any other day, right? Any other day, right?
But, man. That's funny. So the Eagles lose to Tampa Bay 45-17. Their next opponent is the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving in Detroit. Detroit beat Oakland, for those who are keeping count, 18-13 earlier today. And the Giants were off on a bye week, so they'll be very well rested. They're the Redskins' next game next week. And apparently, you know, the Redskins will be rested too. They took this game off, and so they didn't play this week either against the Giants. So we'll have all that kind of analysis and stuff coming up a little bit later. So we'll take a quick break here, our final break, and then we come back. We're not even going to talk football anymore on the Federal Football Report for today. We're going to review the movie Creed. I'm really interested in this. And so Kevin saw, he had an exclusive media kind of pass thing going on, and so he saw it. And he'll review the movie for us coming up next on the Federal Football Report.
Now, back to the Federal Football Report with Kevin and Claude. Man, they'll give anybody a radio show these days.
All right, welcome back to the final segment of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The website is federalnewsradio.com. This pre-Thanksgiving Day edition, the second beatdown edition in a row. A little different, though, is the Skins getting the beatdown at the hands of the Carolina Panthers in Carolina, 44-16. So we're going to finish talking about football for the time being. We'll come back maybe right towards the end, and we'll preview the Giants game coming up on Sunday, and we'll wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving and all that stuff. But right now, we want to switch to the movies because, man, I saw these previews, and I'm so interested in seeing this movie. Kevin was too. Kevin got to see it. We're talking about Creed. Kevin, you saw it. What do you think?
Yeah, let me set it up a little bit. You know, Creed is the story of the son of Apollo Creed, who was the villain in the first time, he started off as the villain in the Rocky franchise, and eventually turned into the hero. Who turned into the victim, right? Who was killed by the big Russian in the ring, mm-hmm. you know? And this is the story of his son who was trying to make a name for himself as a boxer. And let me tell you, I didn't go into this movie anticipating a whole lot. I've seen all the Rocky movies. I've seen Rocky Balboa, you know, the last of the franchise. Uh-huh. I've seen Rocky grow up from the Italian Stallion, who was the finger breaker in the first movie, uh-huh. to the old guy who owns the restaurant. Man, this is a fabulous movie.
Good. I was hoping it would be good.
Fabulous, mm-hmm. fabulous movie. It was directed by Ryan Coogler, or Cogler, I forget mm-hmm. how to pronounce his name. He's the same guy who directed the movie Fruitvale Station.
Okay,
which
good.
Wasn't
Michael B. Johnson in that one, too?
He
who, by the way, is a really good actor.
Right. Very excellent. Michael B. Jordan. No relation. Great actor. Mm-hmm. Also played the Human Torch in the Fantastic Four movie. Drew a lot of complaints because a lot of people felt like you had to be white to be a Human Torch, yeah. right? You know, but he played a great Human Torch, right? Mm-hmm. But this movie, the fabulous thing about this movie was it didn't rely on the Rocky franchise. I mean, the characters were from the Rocky franchise, but that wasn't what the movie was about. And mm-hmm. and I went with my daughter, and we both enjoyed it, but for two completely different reasons.
Oh,
you
that's
know?
Interesting. Explain.
Because the youth aspect. We got an up and coming actor in Michael B. Jordan playing an up and coming boxer, mm-hmm. and his experiences in life were totally different than Rocky's experiences. Mm-hmm. And they each were fighting for something, right? And I can't go into a lot of the detail because I don't want to spoil the plot. But the thing was that this was the illegitimate son of Apollo Creed, right? You know, he didn't grow up in the Apollo Creed household, but Apollo Creed's wife, who was I guess she knew about the whole thing all along. You know, she went and took him in.
Took him in.
So he was raised in a loving household. You know? But he fought early in life, but after that. He was very strong, but he always loved boxing. Mm-hmm. You know, he loved boxing.
Now, question was, without giving away any of the plot, did they go into the Apollo Creed story at all? Like who he was, and did the son know who his dad was? And
eventually,
okay.
He found out early. That was part of it because when the wife who was played by Felicia Rashad,
who by the way. I love.
right.
Anyway.
She played an interesting role, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. We can look at her and relate to Claire Huxtable and all that, right? But then you look at this role and her role as Apollo Creed's wife, and it was just so believable. It was so believable. And his thing was he knew who his father was. He knew who he was. He would go and watch some of the old film of his father and the Rocky fights, right?
Okay.
And that's when he developed. He knew he was on the West Coast, and he would go to Mexico to fight. He just loved fight. He couldn't get a fight because they wouldn't let him fight because they felt like the guys who were the fighters, the true fighters, came up through the hood, and you couldn't live a decent, clean life and be a good fighter. Mm-hmm. So he figured he'd come to the East Coast and where no one knew who he was and build a reputation for himself. And he felt like the one person who would help him do it was his father's old-time mm-hmm. friend, mm-hmm. Rocky Balboa.
Wow.
And just the rapport between these two, the way that he had to convince Rocky to train him and just the communication and the communication with the people in the street, like the kids from Philly, the way he communicated with them. Because to a kid from L.A., going cross-country, going to Philly, family, it's like a different language. Totally different language. The slang's all different, right? You know, and it was fabulous, man. Like I said, my daughter enjoyed it because of that part, and she was asking me movies, asking me questions in the movie about the Apollo Creed character and then his relation to Rocky, and then it would make more sense of the relationship between Rocky and the young Creed, Michael B. Jordan. And I've heard a couple of people say this, and I think it's very believable. Sylvester Stallone could possibly win an Academy Award for this role.
Really?
Really.
Really?
He was that good. He was that good.
And he's not even the main actor.
He's not the main actor. Now, supporting actors should be.
I mean, he's got tons of, yeah.
Supporting actors could be a lock. Should be a lock because of just.
This sounds like a really good movie.
It's a really good, everybody can enjoy this movie. Everybody can enjoy this movie, man. I mean, the fans of the Rocky franchise, the young ladies who are fans of Michael B. Jordan, right?
Boxing. He's got plenty of them. Yeah. I mean,
boxing fans.
Right.
Boxing fans. I don't know if I ever. There's a cameo appearance by two guys that we're very, very familiar with.
Okay. Yes. I think I know. Yeah. Okay.
I was shocked. But they even did a good job.
Yeah. Cornhouse and Wilbon, right?
Cameo appearance, right? They even did a good job. Cornhouse should get an Oscar for his role in it, right? You know, young lady, the romantic interest, Tessa Thompson.
Okay.
Fabulous job because nobody was overacting. Nobody. It seems so natural.
Yeah, when you see these movies where folks are kind of overacting and overdoing it.
Like they're doing Gone with the Wind or something. But it was about the rapport that these two had, man. The chemistry, just the relation, right? Just the communication. It just flowed so naturally, man. Yeah. The choreography of the boxing scenes, amazing.
Did he sell you as a boxer? I mean, did he tell you as if he...
The way they did it, the way they did it was you saw his improvement. You saw his raw skills when he first started. You saw his raw skills when he first got involved with Rocky, who didn't want to train him because he didn't want to, you know, that life was over for him. He was a restaurant owner. And then the main fight, which was, it was actually a title fight. He got a title. His thing was he wanted to grow on his own name. He didn't want to be known, nothing against his father, but he wanted to be known as him and not the son of Apollo Creed.
Right.
But as a matter of fact, he kept it a secret. But once it got out, you know, he was forced to live up to it. And then, you know, he went from the transition of trying to deny it, being forced to live up to it, into embracing it and drawing from it, man. It was a powerful story.
Wow. Powerful story, man. I can't wait to see it. So that's Creed, reviewed by Kevin Stanfield. I'm going to go out and see it as soon as I can find a babysitter. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio and the Federal Movie Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and the website's federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. So the Redskins lose to Carolina 44-16. Let's preview this Giants game. So we know Victor Cruz is going to play again. The Giants had a bye week. They're number one in the NFC East right now. Skins a game back. Eagles a game back. Cowboys two games back of the Giants. We're coming to the home stretch of the season. It seems like the season just started. Now we're at the home stretch already. And so you've got a very important game against the Giants here. And look, not just in the grand scheme of the outlook in the season. I mean, I feel like the fact that the NFC East is kind of on down this year is kind of an added bonus. But I think it's a big game in the outlook of how this year could turn out, how this year shapes out. You know, look, being 5-6 is a lot better than being 4-7 if you come from where the Redskins have come from this year. And so big game against the Giants. We know that Victor Cruz won't play because he's out for the rest of the year. Hadn't played all year, so who knows how much the Giants will miss him. What are the keys coming up to this game, Kevin?
The key is to do something different. You have to do something that Eli Manning isn't anticipating because he's so comfortable when he comes up to the line of scrimmage and looks over the defense. He knows where he's going with the ball as soon as he steps there. You got to be imaginative. You got to be creative. Now, we need Joe Barry, whose name we remembered from the last segment, because you never remember his name from week to week, and one day we'll remember who the offense coordinator's name is. But he's got to come up with something a little bit different than what he did in Detroit, where he was no more than one and 15, yeah, right? We were trying to break that.
0-16 or 1-15.
Yeah, they didn't make it to 2. That's the key. You got to get creative. The offense has to be patient, and Kirk has to be a leader. This is what I recommend Kirk do. The game before, you know, the coach makes a speech. Kirk's got to come up and say this.
There's times for falling apart, and there's times for getting funky. This is one of those funky times. So what's it gonna be?
That's what Kurt's got to do. He's got to challenge his team. Challenge his team to step up. I mean, you got a big game, a game for first place. This is a playoff game for these guys, right? Mm-hmm. This is not the game to determine if you're going to be 3-6 and be relieved when you're not. This is a time to show the world what you made
of. That's right. No, you're absolutely right. And you want to see that fire coming out. You want to see somebody upset about something and ready to beat the Giants. You need to establish the running game, and you need to stop the run. I mean, you got to see basic fundamentals here is what you got to see. You got to see the running game going. You got to see, and yeah, it was the 2008 Detroit Lions that went 0-16. Joe Barry.
Joe. Yeah, maybe you learn something from that, Joe. It's not good to do that.
Stop the run and run the ball. That's what you want to see. You know, you want to see this running game get back going. You want to see the defense be able to stop the run. And for goodness sakes, triple team Odell Beckham Jr. if you have to. Don't give up the big play.
Yeah, you got to do something. Now, I noticed that Eli has a tendency to go with the three-step drop when he's playing the Burgundy and goal because they play afraid a lot of times. They might play 5 yards off. It's time to like do some damage. I mean, if you get burnt a couple of times, if you stick him a couple of times, if you apply the New York Giants principles against Tom Brady to that, he'll start short-arming some of them. You might get burned a couple of times, but if you utilize your ball control offense and just, like, let the dogs out, man, say, okay, Eli, this is for all the marbles, right? You know, jailbreak him a couple of times and just make – you've seen Eli confused.
Right.
We don't want him comfortable. If we make Eli uncomfortable, I think we got a legitimate chance at this game. But don't let him just stand there and decide what he's going to do. Don't let him be the dictator. You dictate to him.
Well, it's next Sunday, folks. This coming Sunday. Sorry about that. The Giants, 1 o'clock kickoff at FedEx Field. The Redskins trying to get over that fourth game in the win column. We'll see how that goes. And after that, you've got the Cowboys, Bears, Bills, Eagles, and Cowboys again to close out the season. We're in the home stretch, ladies and gentlemen. Just 6 more games left. And that'll be 6 more episodes of the Federal Football Report. Kevin, happy Thanksgiving, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there.
Plus the playoffs.
That's it. Yeah, plus the playoffs. Once we win the East, and then we'll be in the playoffs, yes, and then we'll have those.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.